How are you doing today? I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And we have a very special program today, and I can't wait to get started. I just wanted to tell you something that I thought was amusing. I don't believe in coincidences, and I love synchronicity, and I've been experiencing a lot of that this week. But just when I was on Facebook a little while ago promoting this program, I normally write, tune in live, because this show is live. We're live right now. And, well, of course, if you're listening to this in the future, if you download the program and you listen to it later, we're not live. But right now, here we are, Tuesday, November 3rd, and it's live. I wrote in, instead of tune in live, I wrote tune in love. And I really think that was the universe kind of channeling through me what we do on this program. And when you tune in, we're tuning in love and we're spreading love, because love is the only thing that matters and will really make this world a better place. So feel that love right now. We're all tuning it in. Tune in love. I'm going to be using that a lot because I absolutely love it. Love it. Okay, my guest is Bob Comis. And for the first few decades of his life, Bob Comis was oblivious to the suffering of non-human and human animals. And thanks to the courage and bravery of undercover investigators who secretly capture and share footage of the twin horrors of factory farming and industrial slaughter, Bob was roused from his ignorance. He became a vegan but quickly failed. And then he became a humane pig farmer and quickly succeeded. He raised pigs for slaughter for 10 years until one day in January 2014, a powerful vibration of empathy, compassion, and love overwhelmed him. And with the strength of the universal goodness that is our unfettered state of being behind him, he decided to quit pig farming, start a vegetable farm, and become a vegetarian, later vegan, this past January. And today, when Bob pulls a beet out of the ground or unearths a brilliant cluster of potatoes, he is able to be fully present, which is very much the opposite of his experience when he farmed pigs, which he did from a distance, divorced from the moment, disconnected from himself. Bob is the subject of the upcoming documentary film, The Last Pig, by filmmakers Allison Argo and Joseph Brunette. We'll be talking all about his story right now. Welcome to It's All About Food, Bob.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for making the choices that you've made most recently. Okay, I've read a number of your articles. You really are an excellent, articulate writer.
Thank you.
And you have a very interesting story. You know, I'm involved in the arts, in acting and theater, and a lot of times we like to say, don't read your press, weigh it. And I'm imagining, although probably a lot of press these days is electronic in the cyberspace, you've probably gotten a lot of comments supporting and attacking your choices.
Yeah, I have. And you're right, I've gotten both, supportive and not supportive. But to be perfectly honest, I would say that it's been 98% supportive. People have just been wonderful in terms of welcoming me into the vegan community and congratulating me for making the change. And very few people have been critical, but those people, when they're critical, are very critical.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I like to think that the vegan community is all about love. And we don't always see it, but I think for the most part we do. You made some very difficult choices, and one that I liken it to some extent to the movie that came out a long time ago, Sophie's Choice, where this woman in the story, it was during the Holocaust, and she was Polish, not Jewish, and she had to choose which child she wanted to survive, and she had to choose which child would die. And it was, I'll never forget that movie and that story. But you also, when the veil was lifted, I guess, and you can probably explain your feelings, you had some very difficult choices to make.
I did. You know, it was obviously a difficult choice to make, but on the one hand, but on the other hand, it was actually quite an easy choice to make when, as you said, the veil was lifted. because as soon as the veil was lifted, there was reality staring me right in the face, and it couldn't be ignored. And so making the choice in the end was actually kind of easy.
Now, you weren't in one of these industrial scenarios, right? You were raising pigs outdoors. They were roaming around, something people like to say is humane. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah. The pigs on my farm were absolutely happy, joyful. It wasn't a factory farm or anything like that at all. It was pasture-based.
And in reading what you've written, you describe the pigs, and maybe you could do a little bit of that now in terms of the unconditional love that you got from them.
Yeah, they're really wonderful, amazing beings that have an incredible capacity for forgiveness and for love of each other, of other beings. They're incredibly they're actually empathetic. I saw a number of times the pigs exhibit empathy. There were times when I was actually pretty mean to the pigs. I was actually violent. I was depressed, and I would get frustrated with them. And I would sort of, I would even kick them. This didn't happen very often, but it happened. And they always forgave me. And that was incredible. I still haven't forgiven myself, but the pigs always forgave me. They wouldn't act as if I had done anything wrong the next time that I saw them. And I don't believe it's because they didn't remember.
Right. I believe that there are many things that we can learn from many different species of non-human animals. And unfortunately, most of us aren't paying attention to see what we can love. And unconditional love is that thing that I think is most difficult for human beings.
Yeah, I would agree. Absolutely. Since I decided to stop raising pigs and become a vegan and start a veganic vegetable farm, I've really embraced the idea of unconditional universal love. And I've sort of done mind games in my head to challenge this idea of universal love. Well, who could I love? What would it take for somebody to do something that would make it so that I couldn't love them? And in the end, universal love wins out, because universal love is the way to peace. And it's an incredible thing to be able to embrace, even the most monstrous person, because ultimately, at the core of their being, they're good. It's just missing. It's lost. But love can bring that out.
So it sounds like a lot of this experience has really been a form of therapy for you and your individual challenges. I'm not a person who gets angry very often, and I know others who do, and it's difficult to understand. And I'm learning about it, and I'm sure you're learning through your own discovery. Some of that anger and depression, do you think some of it was related to what you were doing with the pigs unconsciously?
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind. What I realized, I actually decided to become vegetarian, and at the same time, I decided to continue to raise pigs because I still think that it's important to have alternatives to factory farming, because the reality is that people are going to continue to eat meat. Unfortunately, and if they are going to, we should have alternatives. So I was going to continue to raise pigs, but the next day, actually, I had a tremendous experience, which led me to decide not to raise pigs. But one of the things that I realized when I was thinking about my relationship to the pigs and to things like depression and happiness was I realized that as long as I were raising pigs or any other animal for slaughter, there was always going to be a barrier to true happiness for me, no matter how far my depression receded, no matter how good my life was, no matter how happy I felt, fundamentally, on an unconscious level, I wouldn't have been truly happy.
Now, I know that some people get really angry when they're scared, when they're full of fear. In some ways, it's a reaction where they don't want to face their fear and they get angry and kind of violent, actually. And I had an experience over a year ago when I talked to 250 cattle ranchers about the impact of animal agriculture on climate change. And my nonprofit actually did a documentary about it called The Lone Vegan Preaching to the Fire. And fortunately, I got out alive. I was a little concerned that they wouldn't like vegan preaching to them about eating plants. But I believe I did it in a loving, non-judgmental way, and they liked me. But afterwards, when we had one-to-one conversations, even during the presentation, people were concerned about their livelihood. And if I was reaching their soul in any way, I know that they were thinking, how could I possibly not do this? It's been in my family forever. It's my livelihood. What else can I do? What else would I do?
Right. It's a major issue that we need to think about when we are interested in helping livestock farmers to decide to stop raising animals for slaughter, because it is true. You know, there are 6th, 7th generation livestock farmers out there who feel that livestock farming is a fundamental part of their identity. And as you mentioned, it's not only part of their identity, but it's also their livelihood. Luckily for me, I was a new farmer. I raised pigs for 10 years. I'm still farming now. I'm raising vegetables. But before that, I had no experience with farming. And my wife also has a job, and so the income that I made from the farm wasn't our only income. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I made the decision to switch, we had a buffer, and some farming families don't have that buffer.
Right.
And it's an issue.
Or what there I'm are trying... some, many are just getting by.
Yeah, absolutely. And even the ones that aren't just getting by, if you're, it's like any business. If you decide one day to change the business to something else entirely, it's a new startup. So there's going to be no income. So it's a real challenge because you have that gap where, you have a thriving business, let's say, one day, and then the next day you're back at the startup stage. I think that people that really want livestock farmers to make a change, we need to think about things like loans and grants and funding. Support to make that change, I think, is important.
Yep. We need a lot of governmental support to make those changes. And that will require a lot on from many, many angles, because right now the government is supporting the growth, actually, in livestock, meat and dairy production and fish production and all of that. Yeah. Now, I want to talk about courage. When I became a vegetarian, I got the idea about not killing animals when I was 15 years old. It was easy for me. I was a teenager. I liked being confrontational. I didn't have a problem arguing with my parents. I kind of thrived on it. It's easy when you're young, I think, to do it. But then when you're older and you have a business, you have a history to look back on, it takes a lot of courage to say, no, I cannot do what I've been doing all along because it's not right. That takes so much courage. Where did you get that courage from?
From the pigs, to be perfectly honest. They, you know, the for me, when I think about it, when I think about courage and whether or not what I did was courageous, where I see myself as having been courageous is, questioning my identity, as a meat eater, more than anything else. Because that's really what, we are. You know, you are, an unusual case. Mm-hmm. Most people don't decide at 15 years old, to become vegetarian or vegan. Most of us decide sometime in their adult lives. And, you know, in the United States, we're raised as meat eaters. We're fed meat as soon as the pediatricians say that it's okay to feed babies meat. And we're fed meat every meal from there until the day we decide not to eat meat. And it becomes part of our identity. Meat eating is literally a part of our identity. So when we say one day, you know, this isn't something that I want to do anymore, you're basically saying, the person that I was, that I've been my whole life, was in a way a bad person because I've been being unethical my whole life. And that takes courage. Yeah. And so I can see courage there more than anything.
We have so much to learn from our non-human animal friends and non-human animal, quote, food that really shouldn't be food. Okay, so now you're a vegetable farmer and you're doing it veganically.
Yes.
How's that working out for you?
It's working out great. you know, it's the farm, you know, this is my second year raising vegetables. Things have gone tremendously well. I should say the second half of the season went tremendously well. The first half of the season was a disaster. But the second half has been fantastic. You know, things grew really well. The business side of it is now doing very well. You know, there's this idea that you need to, you know, for organic farms, most people don't realize, most vegans and vegetarians don't realize that, the main source of fertility on organic farms is, animal manure based compost and slaughterhouse byproducts like bone meal, blood meal, and feather meal. You know, organic farmers think that that's the only way to, build and maintain fertility on their farms. And, you know, it's simply not true. There are veganic farms out there that have been doing it for over a decade, and they're doing it well.
We talked to a number of veganic farmers on this program, and one of the things that I learned is some of the how-to knowledge came from farmers in Europe that didn't have access to animal manure, and they were growing vegetables without using non-human animals. And nowadays, where so many non-human animals are raised for food in these factory farms, these filthy, intensification systems, they are diseased, and their manure has disease in it. Their manure may have E. coli and salmonella and things that aren't healthy for us, that when we put them on top of soil for manure to grow vegetables, the vegetables can become contaminated, or watering these farms with water that's become contaminated from the animals' manure. And we're seeing more and more foodborne illnesses related to just that. So knowing that we can access some vegetables that have been grown organically and veganically without contaminated manure is good. Very good.
It's wonderful.
So thank you for that. We need more of that.
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you charge a premium for that?
No, I would like to give it away for free to convince people to do it.
Ah, that's nice. That's very nice. Now, is your family, have they been supportive during this major transition?
Very. Completely, totally supportive.
Are you all eating the same way?
My wife and I, well, not quite. My wife and I became vegetarian at the same time. But a year later, I became vegan, and she is still eating dairy and eggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard.
And the rest of my family, they are all meat eaters.
Oh, okay. Mm. But they're still supportive somehow.
Yes. Yeah. Very. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about The Last Pig, this documentary film.
Sure.
What's going on? Has it been filmed already?
It has been. We just had our final shoot about 2 weeks ago, actually. Allison Argo and Joe Brunette, who are the filmmakers, first came out last spring, and it's going on 18 months, I think, that we've been filming, and it's been a wonderful process, an emotional process, a thoughtful process, an introspective process. You know, they were able to capture, my last year of pig farming and my transition to vegetable farming. You know, the first time that they came, there were only pigs on the farm. And the last time they were here, there were only vegetables on the farm.
Mm. Now, may I ask what happened to those pigs?
All but 8 were slaughtered. There were 250 pigs on the farm when I decided to make the transition, and you know, for a few reasons, I realized that the vast majority of them would end up being slaughtered, but I wanted to save at least a few, and I was able to find a sanctuary for 8 of them, with the help of Gene Bauer from Farm Sanctuary, and Farm Sanctuary, they were able to find spaces for them, because, you know, I say that they helped because it's not easy to find sanctuary for lots of animals. Mm-hmm. You know, to find sanctuary for 250 pigs is quite difficult. So I was lucky in a way to be able to find sanctuary for 8.
Right. And do you miss not eating animals?
Not at all. No. My experience with the pigs was so profound that it was literally life-changing. You know, I liken my experience to the experience my mother-in-law had. She was a lifetime smoker, pack a day, tried to quit a bunch of times, never could, had a massive heart attack, was told that if she continued to smoke, she would die. And she woke up the morning after her heart attack and heard that, and has never smoked a cigarette since. And not only has not smoked a cigarette, hasn't craved a cigarette.
Wow.
And that has been my experience with eating meat. The pigs affected me so profoundly that I don't miss it. I don't think about it. I'm not interested in it at all.
Do you have any wise words for any of us when we're confronted by people who love their meat, especially their bacon? You know, there's that big bacon movement.
Yeah, there's this. Bacon's huge. I would say speak to them lovingly, to return to love, to remember our interest in unconditional universal love, be compassionate and empathetic, and understand that they are acting on impulses that, as I mentioned earlier, I believe are functioning at the level of their identity. And so to rouse people to question their identity is a tremendous task. And it also requires some sensitivity.
Yeah. Tune in love. That's what I'm going to start saying after today. Tune in love. We all need to tune in a lot more love. Now, my last question for you is, I was reading some of your work is going to be helping other people transition from livestock to vegetables. Is that true?
That was true. That was what I had set out to do. But in the end, I was actually approached by somebody who was not transitioning. I'm sorry, I misunderstood the question. Did you say transitioning from livestock to vegetable farming?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of continuing to help people raise animals for slaughter. Mm-hmm. No, I would be absolutely thrilled to help people transition from livestock farming to vegetable farming. I don't think that I have the experience yet to be able to really do that, but I can certainly provide as much guidance as I'm able to.
Yeah, well, that's really where we need to go. As we were talking before, livestock farmers need to know there's a place they can go to learn quickly. And the government, of course, needs to be behind it with financial help to make people make this transition, because I'm sure you know the number one reason for me, and it sounds like for you, for not killing animals is because they're, I can't even describe it, but they're sentient. They're feeling, they're loving, they're wonderful beings. But it's also devastating to the planet, raising all this livestock and factory farms. It's just horrible what it's doing to our biodiversity and our water and our air and the greenhouse gases that we're putting out. It's just a disaster, and the government needs to be behind making significant change to get people to eat more plants. And then, of course, our health. We're designed to eat plants, not animals, and it's killing us, literally.
Indeed.
Indeed. So is there anything, there was a crowdsource funding project going on for The Last Pig. Is that still going on?
It is. There's about a week left, and it's on Indiegogo, and you can search for it under The Last Pig, and we're almost at our goal. There's still a week to go, and the Allison and Joe actually to finish the film need more than the funding goal that they set. So even if they get to the funding goal, keep contributing because they need a lot more money.
Yeah, it's expensive to do just about anything these days, and it just adds to the challenge of really keeping your integrity and doing what you believe in. There's always this hovering thing over all of us. How am I going to afford it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you have had your experience and you've had the courage to make change, and that you were open and willing to learn from these beautiful pigs that you learn from, and also your dog. There was a beautiful article too on your dog Monk that taught you quite a bit as well.
Yeah, for sure. Monk is the best. He's actually about 10 feet away from me sleeping on the couch.
Woof.
he's deaf,
so. Oh right, you've already said that he's deaf. Well, yeah. Let him I'm sure he can feel my energy. All right. Thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food, Bob. It's a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to watching The Last Pig.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Okay. Take care. Listening to me, I'm Karen Hartglass. And you can find out more about Bob Comus by visiting ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com, my website. And you can read the bio about him and link to some information about The Last Pig, the upcoming documentary film. Okay. Meanwhile, let's take a little break, and I'll be back to talk about some other exciting food topics in the news. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned to PRN.fm for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
I'm Sam Thurman of A Just Cause Coast to Coast. Join me along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez right here on Progressive Radio Network, that's PRN.fm, each Sunday morning from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time for A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice.
Hi, I'm Bhavani, and I'd like to invite you to tune into my show, IE Green, every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. to hear the latest news about our health, the environment, and the good food movement. I'll also share with you one of my favorite recipes, so tune in on Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
We're back for the second part of today's program. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Remember, you can always send me a message. I love to hear from you. My email is info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. And also visit me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And I haven't mentioned it lately, but do you have the responsibleeatingandliving.com app? It's free. Did you know that? Have to tell you, I use it all the time. Why? I like to get my recipes. And there's a lot of them. There's hundreds of recipes, and some of them are my favorite, and I don't always remember exactly how to do them. So I just dial the Responsible Eating and Living app on my phone. It's a cute little green R. And then I can scroll over to some of my favorite recipes and whip them up. So I recommend that for you. It's free. Why not? Let me know what you think of it. It's a pretty simple little thing. Okay. Did you like that last program? A lot of interesting stuff. A very, very difficult choice. And I'm sure different people have different attitudes about the choices this particular person made. I'm just glad that he finally got to the other end and stopped raising pigs for food. But that transition of raising these precious non-human animals and already having the veil lifted and then deciding that they would have to be slaughtered before finally moving on to becoming a vegetable farmer must have been extremely difficult. All right. There are a lot of different things I wanted to talk about. One of the things I want to remind you, we're tuning in love. Don't you love that? I love it. That's what we're doing here. We're tuning in love. Feel the love. Tune in love. Now, there's a bunch of stuff that's in the news that I wanted to talk about. Some of it's fun. You know about Barnivore.com, right? Barnivore, be like boy. Barnivore.com. That's where I go to find out whether some of the alcoholic products that I like to drink occasionally are vegan. And not every alcohol product, not every beer, wine, or vodka, or any other spirit is listed on this site. They're doing their best to get as many of them as they can. But one that used to be on the site as vegan friendly was the Guinness Extra Stout. you know, that dark beer. I loved it. And then a few years ago, I think it was revealed that it wasn't vegan friendly and that the information that they got wasn't accurate. And leave it to the screaming vegans, thank you, who have petitioned Guinness to make their beverages vegan. So you may have seen it in the news, but they are now changing the way they produce their dark stout, and they're going to eliminate fish bladder. That gelatin made from fish bladder is called isinglass. And they're working on changing that out of their recipes. They're not ready yet, but they're working on it. And I'm looking forward to having that beer again because I really enjoyed it. But not with fish bladder gelatin in it. No, thank you. Now, some will say that it's only traces that can wind up in the finished product. But I support all companies becoming more aware of all of the products that they're using to make their final product. And we need to be helping them so that they can make better choices, responsible choices, even when it comes to alcohol. Now, I'm not a big drinker, but, you know, occasionally I like a beer. Occasionally I like a little wine or maybe even something a little more intense. But I want to know that they're cruelty-free. So this was really, really exciting news. And you see, a lot of conservative sites are talking about it, and they're not talking about it in a positive or negative way. They're just sharing the news. And I think it's really, really wonderful. Another thing I got, because I have this radio program, there are different PR places that send me information, ask me if I want to review a product, ask me if I want to speak to somebody about a particular issue. And just today, I got an email. I want to see if I can pull it up here. Yeah, talking about November being Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And I was forwarded an article by Dr. David Perlmutter, Preventing Alzheimer's Disease. Now, you may be familiar with Dr. David Perlmutter. He is an MD, and he's the author of a number of books, including one called Grain Brain. And his information in his Grain Brain book is somewhat similar to the book Wheat Belly. Both of them are very popular books, and basically what they're telling us is to eat more fat, animal fat, and cut out wheat and grains. And I think that the information in these books is very misleading. So I'm talking a little bit about this article because I don't agree with it. And if you have any comments or questions about it, I'd be happy to discuss it with you. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org. But in this article, Dr. Perlmutter is recommending three foods to consume. How is he putting it here? He calls it the anti-Alzheimer's trio, three foods high in brain-healthy fat. And I guess it's to help prevent Alzheimer's disease, and he says it's grass-fed beef, avocados, and coconut oil. Now, you have to imagine I have a problem with grass-fed beef. It may or may not be healthier than industrial beef. Number one, I have an issue about ethics. I don't think any of these precious non-human animals should be killed for food, number one, priority. And number two, there's plenty of evidence that red meat is not a healthy food. We should be eating plants, more plants. What isn't clear today in the science, just because it's so difficult to do these kind of studies and expensive, is how much, if any, animal products we can consume in our diet. Number of people have thrown around a number, maybe 10%. So there's this gray area. If we're consuming mostly whole plant foods, whole minimally processed plant foods, and we include 0 to 10% of animal products in our diet, there's no evidence right now whether that's better or worse. us, but the focus should be on all of us eating plant foods. And when somebody comes out like this and who has a medical degree and says we should be eating grass-fed beef, I think it's a bit irresponsible because the science does not support it. He also recommends coconut oil, and a lot of people believe that coconut oil has a lot of magical powers. I personally like coconut oil to put on my skin. I love it as a makeup remover. I love it as a moisturizer. I love it on my hair to control my frizzy curls when I haven't blown it dry. And occasionally I will use it in some of my recipes. I don't eat it a lot. I don't cook with oil. I don't think it's a superfood or a savior food or a bad food. It is minimally processed. It is processed because whole coconut is going to be better than coconut oil. The one thing I did want to mention, and I haven't done a lot of reading on this, but I'm very devastated to find this out. Perhaps you've heard about this. We live in a world where when humans discover that something can make them money, they want to do all that they can to make the most amount of money, and that often involves exploitation. And while many people are talking about avoiding palm oil because palm oil is the harvesting of the palm trees is ruining rainforests and killing orangutan habitat and devastating to the environment, coconut oil may actually have some new problems to it. And I've just started to read about, oh goodness, how macaque monkeys are being trained to harvest coconuts. And there are supposed to be some brands who confirm that their coconuts are picked by fairly compensated human workers. And those brands are that I'm reading here right now from a particular article are Alafia, Biana, Dr. Bronner's, Essential Trading Cooperative, Harmless Harvest, Mason Orphe, Naked Coconuts, Nutiva, So Delicious, and Zico or Zyco. But there are many other coconut oil companies, and we don't know right now if their coconuts are being harvested by monkeys or by human workers. And then there's that gray area in between if the human workers aren't being treated very well. But apparently they train these macaques to collect 600 to 1,000 coconuts a day, whereas humans can only collect about 100 to 200. So right there they see this advantage to using these lovely little non-human animals, and they are exploited, they are not treated well, and they are not free. So this is very sad news, and I'll be looking into this further. If you have any more information on it, please feel free to share it with me at info@realmeals.org. So when Dr. Perlmutter is recommending that we eat grass-fed beef, avocados, and coconut oil, there are so many issues that are related, ethical issues that are related to these foods. I'm not talking about avocados right now. I don't know anything bad to say about avocados at this moment. But there are so many issues related to grass-fed beef, and it's not a healthy food. And coconut oil now has these ethical issues related to these macaque monkeys. So there you have it. The other thing about Dr. Perlmutter is his information, he talks about that how carbs are destroying our brain, and we really don't see that in the science. Now, I'm sure you know how to tell the difference between highly processed carbs and whole grain foods. There's a big difference. And I believe we're discovering that Alzheimer's, which is affected by plaque on the brain, is very similar to heart disease, which is plaque in the arteries, plaque from cholesterol, plaque from saturated fat, plaque from animal products, not fibrous plant products. Now, like I said before, it's so hard to do studies and expensive to do studies to find out, is one product better than the other? Is eating one way better than the other? And a lot of times we have to glean things from looking at cultures who have eaten one way in their geographical location, and then they move somewhere else, or their culture changes and their diets change. And Japan is a classic example. In the last few decades, dementia has shot up, and it's because they've increased the amount of animal products they've been eating. Their traditional diets included vegetable products and grains and very little animal products. And maybe starting about 50 or more years ago, the Japanese diet has changed from a traditional rice-based diet, which is a grain, to one that is heavy in meat. And we see this in many other countries. It's happening in China, and the rate of Alzheimer's disease is increasing, and dementia is increasing as they choose to consume more animal products. And it's happening also in India as well. They have had the lowest rates of Alzheimer's and have had the lowest rates of meat consumption, but that will probably go up too if it hasn't already. So you cannot trust everything that's out there. And people like to grab what supports what they want to do. Okay, that was Dr. Perlmutter. And so in order to decrease the risk of Alzheimer's, what do we do? Well, Dr. Neil Barnard has a great book out, Power Foods for the Brain. Dr. Jill Furman talks about it all the time. And it's the things that are good to reduce risk of all chronic diseases, heart disease, diabetes, reduce the risk of cancer. It's all the same. It's a whole food, plant-based diet. And doing a lot of good word games and things. Keep your mind active, memorizing stuff. And meditation. I don't know if you remember a few programs back, we were talking about meditation and some studies that have shown that we can actually repair the telomeres in our brain and decrease aging and improve memory from meditation. So there are lots of things that we can do, and we don't need to eat grass-fed beef. Thank you very much. Okay, now I wanted to go over my past week because there was a lot of fun things that had to do with food. You know, I do eat every day. And I post what I eat in my daily blog, What Vegans Eat. Today is actually day 265, which means I have 100 days left, and then I will have blogged a complete year of what this particular vegan eats every day. So this past week, to start with, I was invited to an event by Lantern Books co-founder Martin Rowe. He's been on this program a number of times. And his wife, Mia McDonald, who is the founder of Brighter Green, wonderful organization, was the moderator. And we got to listen to Elise de Saunier. She was on the program last Tuesday, the Canadian who recently came out with a book, Cash Cow. And Farm Sanctuary's Jean Barr was there. It was really a lovely event. It was about 20 of us who were able to have this intimate discussion about animal foods, about milk and the industry and what we can do about it. One of the things that Mia McDonald was talking about with respect to some of the work that she's doing with her organization is how the dairy industry is increasing in China. And this is a culture that just did not consume dairy. And in fact, many of them are lactose intolerant. But people who want to make money, the dairy industry. They see an opportunity. They see many, many people that they can start educating to think that they need to consume dairy. And she was telling us that one of the things that they're taught in school and they are fed milk in school is because it is believed that they will grow bigger and taller when they consume milk. I guess what hasn't gotten to them yet is how it will increase their risk to many cancers, multiple sclerosis, chronic bronchitis, a number of autoimmune diseases, etc., etc. And that's really very sad. And it continually boggles my mind and frustrates me why other cultures want to be so much like us and not learn from our mistakes. Phew. Yeah. So that was a really lovely event. And you may remember also last week I spoke with Judith Haskins about her late father's manuscript that she and her sister and mom published. And as you may remember, it was a very difficult book to read, very dense, but I really recommend it. The title itself, I have to look it up because it was quite a mouthful to begin with. It was called, who remembers? It was called, I'm looking it up here, Congenital Alterable Transmissible Asymmetry, The Spiritual Meaning of Disease and Science. I learned a great deal from that book, and I wish a lot of health practitioners would read it. Well, I had the opportunity. They invited me to lunch a few days after the interview, and I got to meet their 102-year-old mother, and what a delight that was. If you go to my Facebook page, you can see the link. I'm not sure if I put it on my website. I didn't, but that's a reminder to put it there. The mother, Shirley Hyman, had a video made of her when she was 100 years old that you can see on YouTube, and it is absolutely lovely. And it was just wonderful to meet her and speak with her. She studied French when she was of college age, and we had an opportunity to speak together in French and in English, totally lucid and a delight. And I got to photograph her, and she wanted me to photograph her eating her vegan lunch. She's very proud of being a vegan, which I believe she began about 14 years ago when she had heart problems at 88 years old, and her daughters decided, "You're going vegan, Mom." And here she is doing very, very well at 102. Gorgeous skin, too. yeah, so that was really something. The other thing is I went to a Broadway show this past week. A friend of mine was very generous in sharing some comp tickets that she got, and I was meeting her early, and I was sitting in Times Square, and it was right after, actually, it was right after I did this show. Did I talk about this already? I had brought food with me, and because I did the show in the studio last week, and I brought some really great stuff, and I just got to sit in Times Square and watch all these people around me. Very, very lively program. And I brought some great food with me. And the wonderful thing about Manhattan these days, Mayor Bloomberg did this a few years ago while he was mayor. He is no longer. He is no longer mayor. He added a lot of pedestrian zones in the Times Square area, and this is fabulous. So I could sit at a table and eat the best food anywhere. It was my food. And sit in Times Square. It was really, really fun. And I hope you had a great Halloween. I know that we did. And if you haven't had a chance to watch our Halloween show, I hope that you do. We're still enjoying some of those recipes. We finally finished the almond biscotti that we made into finger cookies. We finished the last fingers last night. And we still have plenty of cashew cheese fondue, which is a great recipe. Please, please try it. Please let me know what you think. It is If you've got cheese issues, this is one recipe that is really going to help you wean yourself. Non-human animal milk. We don't need to be consuming dairy. And I know it takes a lot of courage. I was talking about that before with Bob Comas. Making change is difficult, but we all need to do our best. And we need to be sharing information with everyone around us. We cannot be fearful. And if we do it with love, if we tune in love, people will be more open and receptive. But my favorite way of getting people interested in eating plants is to make delicious food and just have them try it. And that's what we do at Responsible Eating and Living. That's why I put up as many recipes as I can. And that's why I've been doing this What Vegans Eat blog. Okay? Let's see. One other thing I wanted to bring to your attention. There's an event coming up on November 21st. And I'm looking for it now. It's the Anti-Fur Society. They're having a conference here in Manhattan. You might be interested about it. I just wanted to let you know. And it's at AFS, which is Apple Frank Samuel, conference.org. AFSconference.org, Anti-Fur Society Conference.org. There's going to be great food, fashion, speakers, and it's here in New York. And it's going to be on November 21st. Why don't I see the date here? Yeah, November 21st. It's going to be Landmark on the Park, 160 Central Park West in the heart of Manhattan. Cruelty-free fashion show and Anti-Fur Society vegan conference. So check that out if you're interested. Very good. I think we've come to the end of this program, so I'm going to tell you to do two things. One is tune in love. Thank you for joining me and tuning in love today. And the other is have a very delicious week.